Welcome to Investing Switzerland, a frequent podcast on the considerations and learnings every new investor needs to take to start investing. In today's episode, Santiago and I take the four principles of investing and bring them to life with initial investments into Pillar 3A Pension Fund, a robo-advisor called True Wealth, and an active brokerage platform called SwissQuote. But first, we briefly discuss a few major movements in the market in the last weeks and what it means for investors.
So what I showed you was the iShares Core ETF on the SPI. SPI stands for the Swiss Performance Index. It's 200 biggest companies in Switzerland. And obviously, Switzerland being heavy on pharma, healthcare stocks, big on financials, and also a little bit of tech nowadays. Hey, Santi, another day. What's been going on? I mean, it's been another interesting 2 weeks, right? So what have you seen?
It sure has. So we saw a lot of news around, cryptocurrencies, obviously. There was a lot going on after the tweet of Elon Musk that they invested in Bitcoins. So that's an interesting story there. It literally made Bitcoin surge to above 50,000, I think, per Bitcoin. So that was insane to see. And I think we're now hovering just above 50.
Just to explain sort of what happened there. So as I understand, Elon Musk decided to invest, was it something like 1.5 billion?
Was it billion? Billion, I think it was.
Yeah, something large, right? Million, whatever it is. Of the company, so Tesla's treasury fund, and a treasury fund is the assets I assume the company have in case of emergencies or just, the financial cushion that they have there that they may need to use in the future or whatever it is, right? So what this means now is that the crypto landscape isn't just about consumers buying individual or individual investors buying Bitcoin, but now actually institutions investing in Bitcoin.
Well, yeah, let's be honest. I mean, institutions have been investing in Bitcoin for quite some time, so I don't think that's not the major change per se, but it just made it to the front page now with this news. It made it kind of okay for big corporates to do these things. I mean, Tesla is a reputable company, right? I mean, you can say about them whatever you want, but in the end, it's a reputable company. And if they do this, and there's a lot of smart people in accounting and finance working at Tesla, I'm sure, if they do this, it somehow is okay to do it for other corporates. And if you think about parking money somewhere, parking large sums of cash somewhere, all of a sudden, Bitcoin maybe becomes kind of an alternative to the US dollar for, parking money. So it seems like it got legitimized with this.
That's the thing. And this is going to affect the price, right? And I think,
absolutely.
Although it seems to be pretty inflated, I mean, in the last 2 months, I would say, the price has really changed significantly. So, I mean, I'm skeptical. It's not sort of on my investing style, I would say, and I don't, although I have accounts ready to buy it, I'm hoping the price comes down from that 50 or 40K mark, and maybe it comes down to 20 or something like that, and then I might buy. But I'm pretty sure that it is going to be around to stay. So I'm pretty positive. I'm just hoping that there's a dip, and then you buy the dip, right?
Exactly. Or maybe you're on the other side. And there was an interview on Bloomberg TV a couple of days ago with Nouriel Roubini. He's a famous guy for some people call him Dr. Doom. So basically, doomsday scenarios, in the markets and stuff. But he's a reputable person. And he literally said that the Flintstones had a better currency than Bitcoin is. So you know, there's also the other extremes that are basically saying this is tulip mania. It cannot go on like this. It's literally, you know, just a bubble and it's going to burst very soon. So at one point, it's somehow legitimized by corporates. At the other end, it really is close to a bubble, some might call it.
I guess that's where people will either win or lose. But who knows? Something to watch, something to be interested in.
Exactly.
There's definitely something interesting going on in the moment, at the moment, right? Another thing that I saw, I mean, when it comes to considering, you know, investing, and I think we'll talk a bit about this, but I also, you know, New Zealand has done really well in fighting coronavirus. But recently, the largest city went into lockdown for the first time in quite a while, which brings in all sorts of skepticism into the market. It's performed quite well. I mean, as a domestic economy, people have been traveling. I mean, I've seen Instagram stories of major festivals and people having parties, and, you know, it's pretty tough in cold Europe at the moment. But that may mean now there's a bit more sort of skepticism or pessimism around the future of the economy. So I saw a bit of a dip there on sort of one of the indexes. But yeah, that is something for me to consider. I mean, I have an interest in the New Zealand economy, and as I am, you know, a New Zealander. But yeah, it will be also an interesting one to buy at some point. If it does come down again, I mean, it's already dropped, but it will always return. They're managing it quite well. But yeah, what's the concept? If you can, you buy at the dip and you sell at the peak or whatever it is. I don't know. I mean, that's the ideal situation, but you can never predict.
Well, I mean, you know, when it comes to these events that might lead or not lead to a dip in the market, obviously, as soon as news is out, you know, markets will react if they're open. We all in this world, we all consider markets to be efficient. And when we talk about markets being efficient, meaning as soon as something is public, the prices will react to it, and the price level will adjust to it, basically, so that the index will fall. So now with the pandemic, we saw it, you know, last year in March. They react super violently. Markets will retract. They will come down. They will adjust to future earnings of that index in this sense. And an index obviously is comprised of individual companies. And now, if we look at the New Zealand stock market, we need to really look at how heavy the industry is. So, what's the heaviest industry in the index? I have no idea. Maybe it's sheep wool or something. I don't know.
Yeah, but it could be something like that. Yeah, meat, okay. Or a red meat.
Yeah, so one something you saw, obviously, the US index being so tech heavy, it recovered so quickly. And if you compare the US index, which is tech heavy, to the European index, which is more financial and energy heavy, the recovery in Europe has been much slower. So there you see the differences in these.
So this is really interesting. Thank you for explaining that. That's really interesting. So you're saying that tech companies are quicker to recover because they're more agile, perhaps less bureaucratic, these sorts of things.
Yeah, I won't say that, but
the
obviously
financial or more traditional markets of Europe or industries of Europe are a bit more sluggish. So it just takes, there's a bit more complexity there, which means the you know, the rebound or the bounce back is slower. So yeah, in New Zealand, which you know, the biggest services would probably be, you know, coal, dairy products, agriculture, these sorts of things, tourism. Obviously, New Zealand has a domestic tourism right now, which is really interesting. But yeah, it's looking at how these will bounce back following a shutdown, a lockdown.
Yeah, or put it very simply, right? Which are the industries that profit from this virtualization of work, virtualization of
tech is benefiting.
So obviously, tech.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Obviously, so the world is becoming more digitalized as we become more isolated. Whereas, yeah, more of those traditional human contact, person-to-person businesses is struggling. I see.
Yeah. And cool. In the end, stock markets are compromised, not compromised, but they're basically they they work or they move up and down based on future earnings of companies, right? And if you look at earnings of tech companies, they have been super resilient last year. I mean, there's now more and more companies reporting on their last year's earnings, and tech companies had phenomenal year. The question is just, is this growth going to continue into the next years? And that's what we'll see now in the stock market, actually, just this week. There's a little bit of concern where, you know, the stock market and the companies might not grow, continue to grow as they were in last year.
So this is, would you call that sort of a bubble or overconfidence in the reality of the situation? I mean, there's been obviously a lot of growth, a lot of development to change. I mean, we've seen companies like Zoom really bounce back, and other companies like Slack maybe drop because they didn't have the audio that Zoom have. And then MS Teams came into the game, which is a Microsoft product. And a lot of that change happened in 1 year, and yeah, maybe it's not as progressive or as aggressive in the year to come.
Yeah, Zoom is a good example. I think Microsoft is not going to be affected or not as much by dropping growth, or they will continue to grow. Let's say like Microsoft, they're perfectly positioned in the future of work. People are going to stay at home longer. There's going to be more flex work. Microsoft is perfectly positioned to capitalize on that. Zoom, on the other hand, Zoom is a point solution, right? They do video calls, that's it. And obviously the growth they saw in 2020, this will flatten out. I mean, there's no, I don't want to do any kind of investment advice on this podcast, but obviously the growth that they had in 2020, I doubt that this the growth rate, it's not going to continue in the next couple of years because most people have transitioned into a virtual call world, and I'd rather see more physical meetings in the future.
Exactly, and it may even decline, right? Because you've got this. I mean, I remember at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was using Zoom as sort of a social thing, but now you've got these new tools like Crowdhouse, which provide. Is it Crowdhouse? Yeah.
No, Clubhouse.
Clubhouse, which, you know, provide more like social audio chats, right? Without the video function. But yeah, maybe I guess we can end up talking about this stuff and really what, you know, it's nice to recap on the market a bit. And I think it's important because we need to discuss some of the logic or the thinking behind, you know, the valuations of the stock prices of these companies. But what we need to do is really come back and talk about, you know, the actions and the steps. And I think last week we did a really good job on laying the foundations, and maybe Santiago, you would like to do a bit of a recap on what we discussed there just in a few minutes, and then we can talk about, you know, from that where do we go next and the actions that I've taken when it comes to thinking about those foundational steps. Exactly.
Yeah. So sure. So today we're really following up on this foundation that we hope or that at least the thoughts that we kind of planted and how to get started. And if we recap a little bit, I mean, we talked about how important it is to think about your goals. Are you going to invest for your retirement? Are you just looking to invest your savings? What are really your goals that you're trying to reach with this endeavor? Then, of course, how important it is to have a balanced portfolio. With a balanced portfolio, we mean a broadly diversified portfolio across regions and across sectors. We talked about how, you know, at one point one sector is doing well, another one is doing bad, one country is doing good, and another economy might do a little less good, and how this balanced, diversified portfolio is helping you to have steady income or steady growth in your returns. We also talked about how important it was to look at low-cost ETFs or look at low-cost products in general. Make sure that also the transaction costs are low. That's super important because it's not just returns that are compounding over time, it's also the costs that are compounding over time. So look out for low management fees in funds, look out for low management and brokerage fees in terms of solutions and then tools that you're going to use to invest. And last but not least, stay disciplined. Emotions are not really helping you while investing, because it's something that you have to do over a super, super long time period to really, get those steady, boring returns that will help you grow your savings. So really stay disciplined, keep paying in, keep investing. Don't be fooled by some short-term ups and downs in the market. Yes, it's fun. And we're going to talk about the fun part, but I think the
other point for discipline there is as well is that you need to make sure that you're set up financially to not have to dip into your savings if something comes up. So, you know, any money that you are investing is, what we call like that you're within your investing budget. And that is a separate section of all the bills and utilities, everything you have to cover on top of, rent and food and socializing. And if you socialize too much, that's going to eat into your investing. So as well as the emotion, it's really making sure that you have a balanced budget outside of your investing budget too. But that's not something we'll go into so much. I think the cool thing there is a really great recap, Santi. And I think what we will be doing is, especially in the context of Switzerland, we'll be taking these practices and everything we talk about are really based on tying into this. So I have a set budget based on, what I can afford outside of, my life expenses. I know, we're not going to be doing any emotional investing. It may be a bit of it, but it's going to be a very small amount. Maybe that's something part of the education and that sort of thing. We will be a bit more active and we will be talking about really the best cost solutions that we feel that are available in Switzerland or something about that, or at least discuss the costs of those platforms or the services that we use. I think... On top of that, we're taking sort of one case, right, Santiago? We're taking our personal situations. We'll also try and cater to different personal situations, right? So that's different type investing amounts. And maybe you want to talk about the different layers of investing and what you need to consider. So what brackets an individual might sit in, and what options they should consider.
Sure. I mean, first of all, we always encourage you to think about your household budget and put a little bit of something aside every month. Think about how much you can put aside every month and invest. And also, I mean, consider this is your investable budget, or this is your investable amount, investable savings. Put this to work. And the very, very first action that you should think about is, and in Switzerland, this is known as the third pillar, a 3A solution. So it's something which it's tax deductible as well. And pension, every year, right? Yes. So every year you can pay in. I think this year it's 6,883 Swiss francs. This you can pay into the third pillar. And what came up in recent years was that you're not just paying this into some weird fund that, is being offered by your bank, but rather apps that are coming to the market that allow you to actually manage and invest that to your likings, right? And so that's really cool. That gives you the power to think about your risk appetite that you have for your third pillar. And this is really the first thing you should do. If you have 6,883 Swiss francs on your account, make sure to pay this into your third pillar pension account, because the full amount is tax deductible. So you less tax that you need to pay. And because it's locked in, I mean, the money is not gone. It's locked in until you're retired, meaning the whole discipline part is kind of being taken care of.
So I think it's a really good point. And for me as well, as someone who's quite new to this, it was a really nice gateway into the investing world, right? Mm-hmm. Because it was the first thing I would say I did with my savings in Switzerland. I knew I benefited from that tax deduction, exemption. But on top of that, I also got to see the performance of it, you know, and also what it felt like to be putting that amount in, you know, over a period. So over 3 years, it was something like, you know, what, 28,000, and then you had the interest on top of that. 21,000.
Returns, I guess. Yeah.
But even through COVID, I saw a return of 6.5%, which was super encouraging. And that mm-hmm. made me even more excited to say, hey, you know, instead of just sitting, having my savings sitting in my savings account, which isn't doing anything, let's go out and do that. So I think just as a recap there, if you have anything under 7,000 a year, that your main priority should just be to put it in to your Pillar 3A pension. And there are a few providers out there, right, Santi?
Yeah. Like I said before, right? I mean, just because the interest rate is now so low in Switzerland for these solutions. So literally you get 0.1, maybe 0.5% of interest on these third pillar accounts. I mean, it's ridiculously low. So you just don't bother with paying in cash and not do anything with it. And that's why we saw this emergence of all those apps in Switzerland. Some of them are around a little bit longer. We have what's called the VIAC solution. That's VIAC. It's an app, easy to download. It's the Veer Bank is in the background. They're doing the custodian, so it's obviously a FINMA regulated bank. So your money is saved there. And this app really allows you to come up with an investment strategy that is up to your risk ability and your risk willingness. So they profile you on this, and then they give you a model portfolio, so kind of a template portfolio, how to invest that third pillar amount. And it's really easy. It's low cost. It's ETFs. Super easy to get started. Another great solution is something from ZKB. It's called Frankly app. Really easy. Again, you pay in the amount. It's a nice mobile app. And then you profile yourself, or you can just select yourself the ETF with the highest or the lowest equity portion. And you pay this into this fund. It's an index fund, so it's super cheap. I think they have an all-in fee of 0.46, 47, something like that. So really attractive, easy to use third pillar applications, which I think are a great way to get started.
There are also, I think most banks will provide this service as well at a higher cost, and there'll be insurance providers out there that provide them as well, more likely at a higher cost too. But I think we can probably do another session or a more detailed session on this towards the end of the year when people are already thinking about making that payment. So then if you have anything more than 7,000 a year that you'd like to invest, I guess you have two other main options, right? And I think these are the ones that we'll be looking at both, but I guess it takes a certain type of personality or a certain type of interest to go down two tracks there. So what are those tracks, Santiago?
Yeah, we briefly touched on this in the last episode, right? So you need to think about how involved you want to be in this investing journey. And what you need to think about is, am I the guy who, you know, don't care, don't want to get bothered with it, just park the money, put it to work, let the professionals or let the robo do it? Or am I the guy who, you know, wants to learn, wants to make sure the costs are going to stay low, because, you know, it's important, it's one of the principles. And are you more the self-directed investor guy? So this is really the first question you need to ask yourself. Do I want to get bothered with this? No. Okay, I'm going to go with a robo app or a robo offering. There's a couple of them out there right now. Or am I more the self-directed guy? Do I want to learn on this journey? You know, is it important for me to have the lowest cost ETFs? And occasionally, maybe I want to, you know, also play an investment theme. I want to play a country, you know, like yourself. You want to maybe, you know, buy an ETF on New Zealand, or you want to maybe buy an ETF on cannabis stocks or whatever it is, just something to add a little bit of flavor into your portfolio, then for sure you're more the self-directed guy and you should go down that route.
So I think that's a really great description of the two options that we will be looking to explore. And I think what will be interesting is developing those and going into them and talking about those experiences, which we've already begun. I think for me, at least when it comes to that robo-advisor, I will be looking at both because I feel a bit more secure, that safe and steady approach with the robo-advisor. And I mentioned this last week, in the last episode as well, that I'm using True Wealth, which is a provider, and they have costs of roughly 0.5%. So I would say quite affordable. And what I'm going to see there is have the experience, see how that performs, and then compare it to the individual ETFs that I'll be buying initially. But then we'll maybe also look a bit more at options and a bit more complicated formats. And I think that's where the fun, that's where some of the fun will come, but it will only be a small portion, maybe 10 or 20% of my overall investable savings, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we may look at other things in later episodes, like crypto. I personally have an interest in art, and art is a topic that is becoming more accessible to retail investors, and there are all sorts of funds and tokenized platforms that allow you to buy, you know, blue chip art. And
I mean, that's a super interesting topic that you're raising, and this is really a general industry trend that we see, right? This democratization of professional money management or wealth management, and you know, these structures like ETF or actively managed certificates or even, you know, certain blockchain investments, they're starting to lower this barrier to entry into asset classes, which are usually only reserved for the very wealthy, not just because of their wealth, but also because of their status. And when I talk about investor status, I really mean the accreditation of professional investor or private investor, because something that the regulator is actually doing here, in not just in Switzerland or across the world, the regulator is often limiting the retail investor, or is kind of trying to, doing air quotes here, trying to save basically the retail investor from doing something
But this is some of the discussion that's actually going on this week in America right now, following the whole hedge fund, GME, GameStop stock debacle.
GameStop.
And there is a real concern that regulators will restrict the access to retail investors. So I think it's not only is it retail access to investing and to these assets that were, you know, reserved for the ultra rich, it is also access to information. And this language of investing has become a lot more accessible. And, you know, through robos, through technology, the language, you don't need the complex language in education, and you can go out and get it. And this is sort of what we're trying to do in this podcast too, right? I mean, you can also go on to Wall Street Bets and really learn from people's experiences and learn from, you know, I would say, like highly capable analysts, although they're not working for some. Yeah, not all.
Very few, let's say, but this is not a good place to get educated, to be honest, on that whole topic. There might be, you know, the occasional nice to read analysis from certain people, I'm sure. I mean, these are not stupid people, but it might not be the best place to get started on this educational journey. You raised an interesting point there regarding, you know, how everybody has access now to not just information, but also to these tools. And again, coming back to the robo versus self-directed tool, we have great brokerage platforms now that allow you to do all kind of analysis, all kind of screening of stocks. You have access to all the ETFs in the world out there. You just need to find your way through that jungle, and that's something we will build up and build up and tell you how you can actually select those right ETFs out there. But coming back to the robo topic and whether, you know, this might be more for you than the self-directed one, I think, again, ask yourself, do you want to do this more diligently? So you need to make sure every month you pay in and then you also invest in it. So this is then the self-directed one. You need to be disciplined, right? And the robo is doing this for you. It's doing this asset allocation monitoring. It's doing the rebalancing of your portfolio. So every time you pay into your account, it's automatically invested. So it's really super helpful to do this. And I think talk a little bit about your experience with True Wealth so far. I mean, has this been fun, engaging at all? Or are you saying like, no, that's just the right amount of engagement I need?
Honestly, so it ties into exactly what you were talking about. I've spent more time on SwissQuote, but I've spent significantly less money on SwissQuote because I'm just trying to learn, you know. You have to, with True Wealth, you have to start with an initial investment of $8,500. It was really nice. They, you go through a series of questions in which they ask you about your openness to risk and they take in your, you know, your financial considerations and your sort of family structure, dependency, dependables, that sort of thing. You can then even adjust it. So I even actually extended the equities section and reduced the bonds section because I'm a bit interested in increasing the risk a little bit more. So in the end, it's really simple. You have a very diversified portfolio. I mean, it's in all sorts, across all sorts of different asset classes. It's very transparent, and that's what I really liked. So actually, it even showed me the ETFs that it was going to invest in and the different things that it was investing in. And actually, if I wanted to, I could then go and buy those on SwissQuote. I haven't done that because I'm trying to learn. Once I've done that, I've left it. I'm not going to be checking the prices every day because that's just going to increase my blood pressure and decrease my life expectancy. I expect over time that there will be a general increase, and I may check in on it once a month, maybe once every 2 months. I will be at least putting some money in every month, every time the paycheck comes through. But I'll also be putting, you know, a much smaller amount, 20%, into SwissQuote, of which... I bought an ETF there. So I think it's Santiago. This was an ETF that you recommended. It was something like SMICH or CHSMI.
Yeah,
or...
so that one was, I wanted to get you started with Swiss, you know.
Of course. It's the greatest stable, economy in the world.
Dividend paying companies like Nestle, Roche, Novartis. What I showed you was the iShares. iShares core ETF on the SPI. SPI stands for the Swiss Performance Index. It's 200 biggest companies in Switzerland. And obviously Switzerland being heavy on pharma, healthcare stocks, big on financials, and also a little bit of tech nowadays.
What is iShares? This is the organization that builds this ETF, or because there's a few others, right? There's Spider, there's Vanguard. iShares is a separate organization.
iShares is a brand. It's a brand name. The organization issuing the ETFs, all the iShares ETFs, is BlackRock. BlackRock is the single biggest, largest asset manager in the whole world, followed closely by Vanguard. So these are the main players in the ETF markets. You have iShares by BlackRock and you have Vanguard. Vanguard traditionally being, I think they were probably one of the first with the ETFs and also looking at the low cost. They were the first ones to really have those super low cost ETFs out there. Because again, Vanguard's investment principles, low cost. I mean, they have to, obviously their products have to be low cost as well. So most ETFs you'll see out there, especially index ETFs, they will be from iShares. They have a core line. The core line is like the it's the label for their cheapest ETFs that they have, so the lowest management fee. And Vanguard, they're across the board. They don't have this core line. They're just, in general, rather low fee. We then have Spider. I guess that's the Spider ETFs. They're from State Street, which is a big asset manager as well in the world. And then we have a bunch of other ones, of course, that are also coming out with ETFs or index funds. We have UBS out there as well. UBS is actually playing the index fund pretty well with super low cost index funds as well.
Very cool. All right. So, I mean, on that, I think really think about your the goals that you need to set and the sort of the disciplines, the foundation, the philosophy that you will embody, I guess, and in your investing career and in your investing future, and then really go out there and activate those accounts. So prioritize the pillar 3A. And then, you know, if you're new to this, I would say set up a robo. If you have the capital for that, so with that initial investment of $8,500, and then, you know, also start to play around with Swiss quote. And if you have a smaller amount than $8,500 on top of the pension 3A pillar, then yeah, you can play with the Swiss quote, but Swiss quote will definitely give you the education. It will also take time and it will be difficult to start, but that's what we'll be talking through. So thank you, Santiago. Any closing remarks from you?
No, I think that's all right. I think again, you summarized it perfectly. Just to stress again, third pillar, fill it up. Invest it, not just pay in, also invest it, make sure the costs are low. And then we will encourage you to do more self-directed in the future. I mean, the robots are going to be easy, but we want to talk about the engaging stuff. So we're going to focus a lot on the self-directed part because, again, this is where this journey will help you. And Orlando, I mean, we're going to use you again as a guinea pig here a lot. I want to hear from you next week or in 2 weeks, you know, how this ETF felt like for you. And also we need to talk about diversification because so far you didn't diversify at all. Huh? We shouldn't just buy one ETF. We should actually buy a couple and spread them across industries and spread them across regions.
Great. Thanks a lot, Santiago. All right. And thank you for listening. We'll be back soon.
Perfect.
That's all for this episode of Investing Switzerland. Make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to your podcasts.